We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to another episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm Josh Nelson, and this is a one-off episode where we are recapping the 2021 Major League Baseball Draft. The Chicago White Sox continued their draft strategy of recent years, going over slot early, especially in the second round. But this year, it was taking a prep player in the first round with shortstop Colson Montgomery, the first prep player the White Sox have taken in the first round since 2012. Who are the other players the White Sox drafted over the 20 rounds? Well, joining me to recap the 2021 Major League Baseball draft for the Chicago White Sox from Future Sox, it's James Fox. And hello, James. Unlike our Twitter space, this time we are recording our thoughts of the Major League Baseball draft. And I think we both agree that from the Twitter space, it was absolutely crazy on how the first top 10 picks worked out, especially Henry Davis shocking everyone, going number one overall to the Pittsburgh Pirates, and Kumar Rocker dropping and Khalil Watson dropping. But for the White Sox, they were tied so long to Colson Montgomery, and at the end of the day, it still ends up being Colson Montgomery at 22 to the White Sox.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Obviously, I think it was something that we thought could happen. Like, obviously, like 4 weeks ago, like we were like, yeah, it's going to be Colson Montgomery. That's what we all kept hearing. And for me, like, I guess, like, I was having issues just with like the draft being later. Like, everything I heard was they love Colson Montgomery. And I'm like, you know, it's not an NFL draft where like they're sending smoke out to like, you know, take somebody else potentially. Like, if somebody else wants to take him, they're going to take him. Right. So like, I guess if everybody knows who you like, it's not that big of a deal, but I was kind of like, you know, it's not really typical White Sox to like have their pick out 5 weeks ahead of time, but the draft was like 4 weeks later than normal. So, you know, it ended up coming to fruition. You know, there were a lot of rumors that he was going to go before him. I think my final mock, I did not have Colson Montgomery at 22, only because I had him going earlier than that. I don't know if you agree. I think the Mets are the biggest threat, but I think the Mets kind of got an inkling that Kumar was going to fall to them, and they just kind of like shifted their bonus pool priorities to that. And then that's kind of why Montgomery fell.
Yeah, because the rumor is, what, $6 million to Kumar Rocker at pick 10? So getting top five money at pick 10? Yeah, that would change the Mets strategy, because the strategy for the Mets was to go under slot. That was the rumor. They would go under slot for Montgomery at pick 10 to try to grab another player that they liked early in the second round to offer first round money again early in the second round. And maybe you can get another player that would have been in the 20 to 30 range to drop to the Mets, and they can get two quality prospects. But I don't think they're complaining about drafting Kumar Rocker. In my mock, I had the Chicago Cubs taking Colson Montgomery, only because the Cubs writers and their prospect guys that I was speaking with the morning of the draft, they thought that was the direction the Cubs were going to go was taking Colson Montgomery. But they end up taking left-hander Jordan Wicks from Kansas State, who I was a bit surprised dropped to the Cubs to pick 21. But I'm happy with the pick. And I think we both said this in the Twitter space on the day of, that we like the pick of Colson Montgomery, but sleeping on it and letting it sit for a few days. Do you still like the pick of Colson Montgomery to the White Sox at pick 22, James?
I do. I wanted him to go young, and obviously he's not as young as some others, but the White Sox think that he's going to stay at shortstop. Other evaluators think that he could. Even if not, he's going to have enough bat for third. You know, I will say getting Westcath, and we'll move on to him obviously in a bit, getting him in the second round to pair with Colson Montgomery makes me feel better about Colson Montgomery. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's Colson and then it's like a bunch of college pitchers, like it's fine. Like it's useful for your system, but you know, I wanted them to go prep, and they did it. So I think the fact that, you know, they got Colson at 22 and then Westcath at 57, I don't know how many people thought like liked Westcath better than Colson, but I think they're both in similar like ranges, right? So you got two players and maybe neither one of them are as high as 22, but they're both like much higher ranked than like 57. So yeah, I mean, they got two guys who they thought were first round talents with their first two picks. And I, you know, I think after that, it was kind of like easy to consider the rest of the draft gravy because, you know, you got those two prep guys up top.
Yeah. I view this as good building blocks because you and I have had this conversation often leading up to the draft that somebody within the organization has to look forward to 2024 because you have a lot of the contracts for the current White Sox core, their championship core, that they're going to expire in 2024. We don't know who's owning the White Sox. We don't know who's managing the money for the White Sox in 2024. That could all change in a couple of years. And I don't want to speculate on that front because the way the White Sox operate money-wise could, you know, completely change, especially if fans come into droves and they get more cash. Maybe they spend more. We'll see. Maybe that's wishful thinking on my part. But at the very least, because the White Sox have two stars right now at shortstop, at Tim Anderson, and third base with Yoan Moncada, that Montgomery and Kath, they can take their time developing. And they can spend, you know, each season at a level very similar to the development that the White Sox had with Tim Anderson and that they tried to have with Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert until both of those guys just made those levels, especially Double A, look super easy compared to their teammates. I'm really excited with what the White Sox were able to do in the first two rounds. And I'm with you, James. I think that these are two good building blocks for the White Sox added to their farm system. Hopefully it gives the farm system a jolt. But do you expect to see Montgomery and Kath with Kanapolis before the season ends?
I think it could happen. I think they're going to go to Arizona for sure. I don't know how quickly they are. So, you know, at Future Sox, I've talked to a lot of the later round picks that are signing. And, it sounds like they're – most of them are going to Birmingham Monday for like some sort of like workout where like the whole draft class is going there. And I didn't check the schedule. So the Barons must be on the road. And then I guess like everybody will just like go to wherever they're sent. Like from there, I don't know if that applies to like Montgomery and Kath and Burke and some of those guys, but that's what the later guys are doing. You know, I would imagine they're going to go to the, everybody gets mad at me because I keep typing the ACL and like, that's what the league's called. It's called the Arizona Complex League. So anytime I say like Jared Kelly rehab start in the ACL, like people's heart drops because, you know, they think that he has a knee injury. Sorry. They changed the name of the league. Like what do you want me to do? But you know, I do think they spend a good portion of time there, but if they hit there, I mean, I don't really see any issue with like sending them on to low A to end their season. If you know that they're going to start there next year anyway, regardless.
Let's go to Sean Burke because there's been a lot of conversation with both Montgomery and Kath. But Sean Burke, the starting pitcher from the University of Maryland, you actually mocked him. So you were crazy where I just had a first round mock. You decided to mock the first round and also pick guys the White Sox could take in the second and third round. And you had Sean Burke as the White Sox third round pick. Did you have inside information on that, or was that just a fantastic guess?
So I heard the name. I think I had him in like my mock draft 2.0 as like one of the, cause I knew that that was a guy that they liked. But I think I had him in the second round like months ago. And then when I went to go do this one, I was like, you know, McCade Brown, the Indiana thing. Like I kind of thought it would be college pitcher. So I did get like a little bit lucky cause I didn't know if he'd fall to 94. Cause obviously like, and they say this stuff all the time and who knows, but Mike Shirley said, you know, they have a scout, you know, that would have taken him, you know, that would have been fine with him in the first round, which we both know is nuts, but you know, so they really like Sean Burke. I mean, he's 6'6", I think he's 230. You know, it's just like good fastball characteristics. He needs a third pitch. He needs to throw more strikes, but I mean, at 97, I mean, that's a college arm that with their development program, I mean, it's one of the things that they do pretty well and he fits in. He'll be a high four seamer breaking ball type. So I would imagine, I mean, I don't know how much he's going to pitch this year because there was a lot of talk that a lot of these college starters would just get shut down. But I mean, he's it. I mean, you would think he's it. Maybe Winston to start next year even. I mean, there's really no reason for him to pitch at Kannapolis, especially the way that league is skewing super young. So, I mean, that's a guy, you know, could move pretty quick.
Yeah, Sean Burke had 107 strikeouts in 74 and a third innings pitched for Maryland in 2021. His season ERA was 3.27. I do remember he got hot late because there was a point during the season when checking in on the Big Ten that, wow, Maryland starter has a 5 ERA. And that was Sean Burke. And that was early April, April 9th. And then after that start against Nebraska, Burke just got hot and he was able to drop that ERA from 5.09 to 3.27, which is exactly what you want to see. His last two starts of the year were fantastic against Indiana. 6 2/3 scoreless innings, 12 strikeouts to just one hit allowed, and he walked three. And on June 5th against Norfolk State, he threw six scoreless innings, striking out eight, allowing five hits and four runs. So Sean Burke had a very strong finish to his 2021 season. And I'm curious to see on what he can do going into the White Sox farm system, because the one knock that I heard is that, yeah, he can throw 96, but he wasn't throwing 96 towards the end of the season. So endurance is going to be something that he'll have to work on, and how can he continue to throw and maintain velocity over the entire course of a season? But that's a common thing with college pitchers. I mean, even Jack Leiter, who went second overall to Texas, I would see him early in the season, James, and he was throwing 97. College World Series, he's throwing 91, 92. So that's just something that happens with all college starting pitchers, that that's something they have to learn in their professional development, is how to maintain velocity over the entire course of a season. But yeah, I as far as his arsenal and, you know, having that success with in the Big Ten at Maryland, the Big Ten's getting better at baseball. I like this option, especially if the White Sox do make a trade before July 31st. And let's say they trade Jonathan Stever. Well, Sean Burke can take Jonathan Stever's spot in a couple of seasons to be some of that starting pitching depth the White Sox will need, especially depending on contract situations with Carlos Rodon and Lance Lynn. And Burke can definitely be part of that mix for the White Sox starting pitching depth in a couple of seasons, where in case of injury or trade or someone leaves in free agency, that maybe in 2023, 2024, we could be talking about Sean Burke getting some spot starts with the White Sox. I could see that as far as his future with the team. Any risk as far as bullpen with Sean Burke?
Yeah, I think there's always some. I think if a third pitch isn't good enough, I think there's bullpen risk for sure. I mean, ideally, if that happens, you've traded him already to a team that still thinks that he can start. But I mean, this is they think it's a starter. I mean, it's something that Mike Shirley has said over and over again, and I feel like it might be a change between him and Nick Hostetler. You know, he wants to target starters and guys that have started. And look, there's a bunch of relief profiles in this class. But, you know, Sean Burke, they're going to run out as a starter because they think he's a starter. I don't, do you think that he, like, do you think that he fell? Because, like, just looking at rankings, I mean, I think Pipeline had him in the 70s, but Baseball America had him at 54 and they had Kath at 53. So, I mean, you know, looking at Baseball America, the White Sox got three of the top 55 players in the draft class, which, you know,
this is great. It's
pretty good picking where they're picking.
Yeah, I think with Burke, he was a second, third round grade for me. So getting him in the third round is a great value for the White Sox. It gets weird in the second round because you have the teams that were clearly underslotting the first round going way over slot in the second round, right? I think Bubba Chandler went third round, and I definitely had a first round grade for him. Yeah, so it gets weird as far as on how it gets shuffled and the players, but I don't think the White Sox reached, or maybe not, you know, the White Sean Burke fell to the White Sox because of some negative reason. I feel like this is a good spot for Sean Burke and good spot for the White Sox to pick up someone that I do believe can be a starting pitcher with time. And like I said, in 2023, 2024, I do believe that Burke can be part of the White Sox starting pitching depth, and maybe he's getting some spot starts during doubleheaders, and we'll see where he goes. Kind of like we're in this position with Jonathan Stever, where maybe Burke, as his floor, is a quadruple A starting pitcher, James, and we don't know if he could, if he's got staying power in the major leagues or if he's got to move to the bullpen. But for a third round pick, I still think that's pretty good value for the White Sox, where they have struggled to develop third rounders to reach the major leagues at the least.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of people like Jonathan Stever, or they did, like, until they saw him prematurely pitch in the big leagues. Right. I mean, he was kind of rising on prospect rankings. I mean, he was a fifth rounder out of Indiana. He had kind of a tough year to close out his junior year, but then he went to Winston and he was totally different. And he was very good. Sean Burke's a much better prospect at the same stage than Jonathan Stever was. So, I mean, this is like a real guy. It's a real pitching prospect. I mean, we haven't done any top 30s or anything, but he's definitely like top 12 or 13 in their system right now, I would think. And it's obviously not a great system, but yeah, I mean, he's a real guy and he'll be added to their mix of starters going forward.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you want an ad-free version of the Sox Machine podcast, you can sign up at patreon.com/SoxMachine. Sox Machine Patreon supporters get exclusive content like the 2021 Major League Baseball Draft Reports, an ad-free version of the podcast and website, plus the first opportunity to purchase or receive our new swag items, like the new Sox Machine caps we just got. Monthly plans start at just $2, and it goes a long way in helping support Sox Machine, which we are very grateful for. Again, visit patreon.com/SoxMachine to sign up. All right, let's take a look at the White Sox picks throughout the first 10 here. There's a lot of senior college relievers, which these are the $10,000 bonus guys. The guys I'm talking about are like Taylor Broadway from Ole Miss. That's a $10,000 signing. He was a college reliever. The blacksmith, Theo Denlinger from Bradley University. He's an interesting story. I think that's why you'll hear a lot about Theo. He's 25 years old, so he's much older on the college age scale. He's got good stuff, but he's known for being a blacksmith and creating videos chopping things with the swords that he makes. Frazier Ellard from Liberty University, another college reliever. Gil Luna from Arizona, another college reliever. Tommy Summer from Indiana, he started games for the Hoosiers, but I think ultimately he moves into the bullpen. So those are your pick 6 through 10. And James, I've always felt like with this strategy, these are your $10,000 signing bonus guys to help go over slot. Now, with pick 4, their fourth round pick, I don't think they're going over slot on him. But what are your thoughts about Brooks Goswine from Bradley University?
So, you know, the thing that's weird about him is I've watched him a little bit since they've taken him, and I've talked to people, and I guess even like Kevin Goldstein and some others said that it's like a really good, like left-handed arm. And he's kind of like a pop-up guy, but the numbers were bad and they should be better, like pitching at Bradley. Right. So maybe that's just because he's not a starter. Cause I think he's like ran it up to 97 from the left side and he has a good breaking ball. So then I don't know how he has an ERA in the fives, you know, pitching in that conference. Right. So like at a certain point, like the stats matter there, but they, you know, they like his arm enough to take him there. I would imagine they'll send him out as a starter, even if they think like, oh yeah, he's like a left-handed reliever at some point, you know? So, you know, a guy that was similar and look, I don't think he's going to be like Aaron Bummer. Cause that's crazy. But I mean, Aaron Bummer was a college starter at Nebraska and he wasn't very good. Right. And then he transitions over and all of a sudden it's a completely different guy. So like the White Sox have done this a lot. It's a little strange, you know, like they took him in the fourth, and like we've talked about, that doesn't mean that he's like a fourth round value there. Right. I mean, I think Baseball America had him in the 300s on their top 500. The next guy is more interesting, which kind of is like, okay, why didn't you just take Tanner McDougal in the fourth and Goswin in the, but you know, stuff like that's weird. So who knows, but yes, like those top five picks, you know, are definitely different than the guys that we kind of just like glossed over in 6 through 10.
Yeah. I didn't know if it would be fair to gloss over Goswin because he was selected in the fourth round, but I'm seeing college reliever as far as in his profile, and maybe as a college reliever, he's got a better opportunity to stay consistent 96, 97, James, out of the bullpen and just be a fastball slider guy and hope that maybe Goswin can develop somebody like a Jace Fry type reliever for the White Sox down the road.
I do think he's going to get fairly real money though. Like he's probably going to get like 100,000, I would think, in the fourth round. So yeah. Whereas you're right, the 6 through 10, those are 10K guys. And really quick, we don't have to touch on these, and you know, cause we'd be here all day. Taylor Broadway is actually a little bit interesting. He is old, which, you know, is why he's going to be cheap, but Baseball America ranked him, I think, in the 300 range, you know, 350 range. Like that's a guy that could move quickly as a reliever because you really have nothing to lose because he's like 24 years old already.
Yeah, he is older. There's a bad taste because I saw him later in the season where he absolutely got rocked. I've seen him when he's good, and I think he's got potential to rise through a system, but he is someone that is a bit undersized. He's 5'11", not quite 6 feet tall. He's 94, 95 as far as the fastball. I'm looking up the start. Yeah, the LSU start where he gave up 7 hits in 3 innings is the one that I remember. No, Arizona. Yes. Yeah, so in the postseason, in the Super Regional, now I remember, Broadway allowed 8 hits and 6 earned runs in 3 innings pitched against Arizona. And I just felt like, oh, this is the white flag reliever. And then I go back into my notes in my Google sheet and be like, oh, no, I've seen this guy a few times. Well, this is interesting. He's not the white flag guy, but ended up being that way for Ole Miss. So we'll see what Broadway can do for the White Sox. But yeah, let's talk about some of the more intriguing picks after the first three rounds for the White Sox. And I'm with you. So I wrote three names down that I thought were intriguing. So let's go to pick number 5, the 5th round pick, Tanner McDougal. What are you hearing and what do you like of McDougal to the White Sox?
So surely, you know, I was lucky enough to get on a conference call with Mike Shirley. I just wanted him on the record as to, like, you know, kind of what they saw. You know, they saw him at the combine, but they said that they liked him before that. I mean, 6'5" righty. They think he can start. I mean, it's a pretty good fastball, but I guess it's a slider with 3000 RPMs, which, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, for an 18-year-old, and it's not somebody who's already, like, maxed out physically. So if you're going to take a chance here, this seems like the type of guy that you're going to take a chance on. I mean, I don't know how real I think it was an Oregon commitment. I don't know how much he ever really considered that when he's, you know, tweeting that he's a member of the White Sox organization, like, an hour after he's chosen, you know? So, and guys don't go in the top 10 rounds, like, unless they're for sure signing. This might be, like, close to $1 million, though. So, I mean, this is, you know, you add him to Andrew Dahlquist and Matthew Thompson, and he's not the caliber of prospect as Jared Kelly, obviously, but, you know, you got a whole stable of young prep righties. This is the spot, I think, to do it. Like, it makes a lot of sense, and it's a guy with a lot of untapped potential, it seems. I mean, it's a very close-knit community in that Vegas area. So he was well known there, but he wasn't one of these guys that was, you know, like, amazing on the circuit. You know, it's not like he's like Chase Petty or something like that. He was ranked 148th at Baseball America. But I mean, scouting directors always say good things on conference calls, but Shirley sounded very, very excited to be able to, like, add this guy.
Yeah. The notes that I got from Prep Baseball Report is that McDougal went to a Super 60 Pro Showcase in February of 2021. And there, his fastball, his max velocity on the fastball was 94. He was most consistent at 92 miles per hour during his bullpen. They listed it as a curveball. I've seen multiple reports that it's a swooping slider. So let's just split the difference and call it a slurve. It's a slurve for McDougal. And his changeup was 84 to 88 miles per hour. And asking some folks that I know, you know, a Prep Baseball Report that saw him at the showcase, they somewhat his caliber compared him to Andrew Dahlquist, which the White Sox took in the 3rd round a couple of years ago. And they thought that he was going to go to Oregon because he was an Oregon Duck commit. And that would have been a great pickup for Oregon. But the White Sox, I'm agreeing with you here, James. They must be pretty serious in the 5th round, where the cost savings rounds through 6 through 10. And you have Kylie McDaniel of ESPN reporting that Wes Kath is going to get a bonus similar to the 40th pick of the 2021 Major League Baseball draft. So that's about $1.85 million. So your overslot guys are probably going to be Kath and McDougal. And I'm curious to see on how McDougal develops. And I'm with you, James. He gets kind of thrown into this pile with Jared Kelly, Matthew Thompson, and Andrew Dahlquist as these prep pitchers that have some promise. And we'll see if the White Sox can further develop them into more than just promising guys. Can they be part of the next wave of starting pitchers the White Sox promote to the major leagues with a timetable of, let's say, 2024? So definitely somebody to keep an eye on, especially when McDougal starts pitching again. But I agree with you with the college guys that most teams are going to shut them down. But with McDougal coming from high school and having some time off, do you think he's going to pitch in Arizona and then we'll see him next year in Kannapolis?
I mean, I hope we see him. I mean, we're going to future Sox. We're going to have Sean Williams out there a few times. He usually goes out to see the pick. So, you know, just to get some video would be good just to see what he looks. I would imagine I think the issue with the college guys, right, is all the pitching after the long layoff, but the prep kids didn't really have that. So my guess is as soon as he signs, you know, we see him a little bit and it might only be 10 innings or so, but you know, at least he'll pitch a little bit. So, you know, I wrote a big long piece for Future Sox today, kind of talking about the draft class as a whole. And I separated Montgomery and Kath, but I also did, you know, they got four prep players and I'm sure we'll get to the other one, you know, and then a bunch of college pitching. And then Mike Shirley said something that I thought was very interesting with like some of the position players that they added late. If you want to get into that too, I think you've seen some of those guys.
Yeah. So let's talk about the other players that intrigue you in this draft class. So if you were to jot some guys down, because not everyone the White Sox select is going to be super interesting or intriguing, but who else is catching your attention before or even after speaking with Mike Shirley?
So, you know, I think we went back and forth a little bit. I was expecting them to take a couple of shots on day three. And I think through round 13 or 14, like it was a little bit underwhelming, right? Well, then the Cameron Butler pick happens at 15. And, you know, it's an outfielder from Big Valley Christian High School in California. And I don't know if you looked at his statistics or not. He's playing at a super small school in California. So then I'm like, okay, well, this guy's in the 15th. Like maybe he's going to sign like in a similar fashion to like, you know, your Bryce Bush pick or, you know, DJ Gladney was similar, you know, where an area scout just fell in love with the kid and had a good relationship. And it sounds like that's going to happen. Like he's signing. I'm not sure how much over it's going to be, but it'll definitely be over the 125K. So he was described as a pop-up prospect kind of everywhere. MLB Pipeline didn't have him ranked, but Baseball America had him ranked at 210.
Yeah.
Which, you know, like, I mean, that's pretty surprising. I mean, that puts him like, if you're stacking this draft class, right? I mean, that's the fifth best player if you look at it that way, right? Just because of ranking. So like, this is a guy that matters. He played shortstop. He's going to play center. Mike Shirley said it's a guy they think could have five tools. I mean, that's just something people throw around. He hit 700 this year with, with 15 homers in like 23 baseball games. I mean, it's absolute. So, you know, he's likely playing nobody, but it's just like an athletic profile of a guy that's just going to go right into your system. I mean, he was going to, he had a commitment to Cal Poly. So that's, you know, they think he's like a fifth round player, basically. I don't know if they're going to pay him like a fifth round guy, but they said, you know, they thought he was like fifth, sixth round, you know, caliber player. And they're, you know, they took him in the 15th. He had a really good relationship with Adam Virchis, who was the signing scout. That's, you know, the scout that found Marcus Semien all those years ago. And he was the lead scout on Andrew Vaughn too. So that's probably the next of the interesting guys, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. Some notes that I got from Prep Baseball Report, they picked him to be the California Player of the Year. So think about all the California prep prospects. They pick Cameron Butler over Marcelo Mayer as their prep player of the year for the season that he had. Butler did face the Chicago Scouts Association travel team back in October 2020. He pitched an inning. He stole a couple bases in that game. And his Super 60 showcase, so the same showcase we talked about for McDougal just a brief while ago, in that same showcase, Butler ran a 6.7 60-yard dash, so that's 60 grade. And his max exit velocity during the hitting drills was 100 miles per hour. So I'm with you, James, and I understand the interest from the Chicago White Sox, especially Mike Shirley in the 15th round. There are some tools here. There's not a set position for Butler because he played all over the place, and he also pitched. So I'm intrigued in what the White Sox do with Cameron Butler moving forward. You may see him all over the diamond, and maybe the White Sox give him a chance to be a two-way player. There are showcases where he hit 89 miles per hour, this fastball velocity. There are some that he was 84, 86, and that's not going to play. But if they don't think he's a pitcher, it'll be really intriguing to see which positions that they put Butler in, because he could be one of these super utility guys that he plays some time in the infield and in the outfield. But again, he's really young, and we'll probably get a first taste of watching him next year in Kannapolis as far as in the minor leagues. But, you know, the more we're talking about Kannapolis in 2022, I haven't been to the new stadium yet, James, but if they have Colson Montgomery, Wes Kath, and Cameron Butler on that team in 2022, that'll get me to buy a plane ticket to go visit Kannapolis. All right, so that's Cameron Butler. Who else on your list intrigues you?
So I didn't know anything about Christian Edwards. You know, usually the 11th rounder is a guy that they really want. Like that, the 11th rounder is an important pick because it's the first pick, you know, in the round where you can go over the 125K to grab somebody. Christian Edwards, right-handed pitcher out of Jacksonville State, 6'3", 205. You know, I asked Shirley about him. Shirley said that they went in to see Trey Sweeney, and Christian Edwards pitched against him, and he was 94 to 98, and it was loud, he said, with a good breaking ball, athletic body. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that's $150,000 to buy him out of his final year at Jacksonville State. And, you know, he just becomes like an athletic starter at the bottom of your system. And who knows, maybe he turns into something, or he's, you know, a reliever down the road. It's just like an arm that they really liked that I think was underrated. So, you know, that Jacksonville State, I don't really know. And I had never heard of him, like I said, but the 12th rounder I found funny. Like Johnny Ray is a Quincy, Illinois guy. I think Shirley knew him very well. So Johnny Ray, I don't know how much you've watched him, but he was supposed to be like a top 5 round guy, like coming into the season. And he was pretty terrible this year. And he throws very hard. But he gave up 11 homers on his fastball this year, which isn't good. But I think he's the type where they'll send him to Kannapolis, and he could be throwing 99 out of a bullpen, and fans in the stands are going to be like, where the heck did they get this kid from? And, you know, he's going to have to command it. And I don't think his spin traits are great if he's given up as many hits as he is, because his, you know, his velocity is better than that. But in the 12th round, I mean, look, take guys that throw high 90s and see if they can figure it out, basically.
Yeah, and back to Edwards. I think Edwards has a chance to be a power reliever for the White Sox, because there are some that think that he can maintain 98, 99 in short stints, like an inning or two. But yeah, mostly in his starts, he was sitting 94, 95, which is still really good. There are some guys that like his slider that have seen him. Again, these are guys that were probably at that same game that the White Sox were at, watching Trey Sweeney, who ultimately won the first round to the New York Yankees. So Edwards is someone that's on my list of guys that intrigued me. Anyone else other than Johnny Ray? I'm not that intrigued with Johnny Ray. I'll have to see what he can do in the minor leagues, because I'm with you, James, that his pitches are a little hittable.
Very, very much so. Yes. You know, I don't know anything at all about Colby Smelly, other than I read today that he's technically not decided what to do yet. But so then, you know, just moving on, it's a lot of college position players, and I'll let you take over for some of this, because I think you've seen some of these guys more than I have. But, you know, Terrell Tatum, NC State outfielder, Jason Gonzalez, third baseman out of Vandy, Adam Hackenberg is Christian Hackenberg's younger brother. He's been hurt a lot, but he's a catcher from Clemson. And then Sean Gusenberg from Northwestern hit a ton in the Big Ten this year. One thing Mike Shirley said is, you know, they added a lot of these Power Five guys because they're developed well and they were well coached. And he brought it back to Colson Montgomery and Wes Kath. And when you're going to have as many high school guys like this in your system, and look, you do have some intriguing faraway guys like Brian Ramos and Jose Rodriguez, and those minor league teams are pretty bad, like as we've talked about. When you can add guys like this that can teach those guys the right way to do things, and maybe you think that stuff's overrated. I hear it coaching football all the time, and I roll my eyes because some of it I think is overrated. But maybe there is something to be said for adding, you know, proven winners at big colleges that have performed that can help these guys along the way. And if they never make it to the big leagues for you, but Wes Kath is better because, you know, he hung around with Jason Gonzalez for 2 years in the minors. Fantastic.
Yeah. Tatum, he had a good super regional against Arkansas. I was surprised that he fell this far. I thought he could maybe go in the later, somebody's later top 10 picks, especially if they're looking to do an undercut deal. So I think that's a good signing for the White Sox. I think he's going to play some center field in the lower levels of the White Sox farm system. So don't be surprised if he does play in center field. I don't know if he's going to stick at center field as he progresses through the farm system. He might be better suited in left field. But I could see him in Kannapolis and Winston-Salem playing in center field. And then Jason Gonzalez. Jason Gonzalez can hit a fastball. I don't know if he can hit breaking pitches. I've seen him hit a home run against a hanging slider that was barely breaking, like just a cement mixer that was pretty much put on a tee. But there's some power. Like if he gets into one, he can launch it. And Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbin was having Jason Gonzalez, you know, just describing this guy. You're probably thinking, oh, Jason Gonzalez probably batted fifth. Maybe for Vanderbilt. No, he batted ninth for Vanderbilt this year. He had a big home run. If you want to see the highlight in game one of the College World Series final against Mississippi State, I think he can stick at third base, or at least he'll try to stick at third base for the White Sox. That's where he'll stay, or at least that's where he played for Vanderbilt. He's another one that I'm kind of surprised didn't go before the 17th round. I'm wondering if there was anything else that played into it, because he's definitely available. He was a senior, and his final line with Vanderbilt this year, he hit .280 with a .391 on base percentage and slugged .497. But again, I think he's got trouble against breaking pitches. He struck out 69 times to 32 walks. And he did hit 9 home runs out of the 9 spot for Vanderbilt this year in 61 games. So we'll see. I don't think he's like a legit prospect, James, but he's someone that I'm expecting once he starts getting in a uniform for the White Sox in Kannapolis or Winston-Salem, then people are going to post videos of him, highlights of him hitting home runs in the lower levels. And people are going to ask, hey, is Jason Gonzalez someone? But it's going to be this continuing this conversation, much like we're having the conversation about Mike or Adolfo. Yeah, there's power, but this guy's striking out 38%+ of the time. So is that going to prevent them from developing and reaching the major leagues? And I think that's the problem with Jason Gonzalez, is that that's what he's going to have to work on, is do a better job of recognizing breaking pitches. Because right now, I think as an opposing pitcher, you can throw him 3 average-ish sliders, and he's going to strike out.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, going back to Micker's funny. I mean, you know, if you put Micker Adolfo in the big leagues right now, you might as well give him, you know, like when you go swimming as a kid and they have those, like, pool noodles? That's what it would look like. If it would be like trying to hit a golf ball with one of those, I feel like, which is, you know, people see the big power, and that's fine, but, you know, it only takes you so far. I think of these guys, the one that intrigues me the most is Adam Hackenberg. He's the youngest of the group. I hadn't really seen him at all. I know he's had a lot of injury questions, but, you know, Shirley said that they've been scouting him for a long time, but they think it's a plus defensive profile. So look, I mean, if it is a plus, if that's true and it is a plus defensive profile, like catchers take a while, but like he'll be in the minors for a while. If he hits at all, but he can catch, you know, there's always some big league versatility because, I mean, Sebi Zavala is in the big leagues right now. And, you know, he struck out 37% of the time at Charlotte too. So if you can catch, like you have, there's a shot.
Is he going to sign?
He is signing. Yeah.
Okay. That was my question about Adam. Is he signing?
It's weird. Like, cause I think he was in his fourth year, I think, but he's only going to be 21 somehow. So yeah, he did. He confirmed that he's signing and he's in that group. I mean, so Shirley did mention, he said he had some bumps in the road with his health, but he's back healthy now. The bat's coming back together, strong, durable body, you know, that. So I don't know what the injuries were, but it seems like he's had quite a bit of them, or quite a few.
Yeah, it's impacting as far as his ability hitting wise with power. He just doesn't hit with a lot of power. This season in 32 games started, Hackenberg hit 258 with a 357 on base percentage, but slugged just 392. He had 27 strikeouts to 13 walks. So it's definitely more contact than power. So I'm intrigued if he is, because he still had a couple of years remaining as far as eligibility with Clemson. So that's why when they selected him, I thought, well, is this a throwaway pick? Because he's going back to Clemson. But if he's signing, going back to the White Sox as far as young pitching staff, right? They have all these teenagers. You're adding Tanner McDougal to the list with Kelly and Thompson and Dahlquist, that maybe having somebody that is really good defensively and that has experience working with the pitching staff, especially from a Power 5 school like Clemson, there are benefits to having somebody like Hackenberg in tow within your farm system. He may never reach the major leagues, but at least he could help out the prep pitchers that we are hoping could reach the major leagues in 4 to 5 years. Maybe he can help out with their journey.
Yeah. And, you know, he mentioned that there was a lot of catching discussion in the room, he said, you know, and look, some of this stuff is just what these guys say to get off of a conference call, but you know, they do need lower level catching depth, like in their system. So they added this guy, you know, when he was talking, he made it seem like Kobe Smelly was, you know, that, you know, he said there was, they were excited to get him along with Kobe Smelly out of Shelton State. He called him a junior college kid with tremendous upside. And he basically said that they landed Kobe Smelly because of COVID, because the junior college kids basically stayed a year longer than they should have. So if he would have went on to, I think it's Louisiana Lafayette where he's committed to. So if he would have went on to Louisiana Lafayette, he wouldn't have been eligible like for the draft this year, but he was because he stayed at junior college. And he basically spoke as if they had both of them in the fold. I just, you know, linked in my article today, there was like an article out of Louisiana that said that he hadn't decided yet. So who knows? Maybe that's just a matter of they have to see how much like money they have left on top of the $125K to like get him to not go to Louisiana.
All right. So anybody else on your list of intriguing guys or anyone that of interest that White Sox fans can prepare to track? Cause I'm out of guys on my list.
Yeah, no, that's it. I mean, 20 round draft, you know, the first five were important. And then the 15th rounder. And then anything after that, I mean, if you get, look, the Sox have had a decent track record lately of stumbling on guys that are useful. And we'll see if we come up with some. I do agree with you though, people that are heavy into the minor leagues, they're going to see some of these college guys in the lower level that play very, very well. And then they're not going to be ranked on top 30 prospect lists. And, you know, it's just because they're not really prospects, right? They just, they're hitting Kannapolis against young players, and then they get to double A and it's kind of just over. They've had a lot of guys like that over the years.
Yeah. Jason Gonzalez could hit 15 home runs for Kannapolis and Winston-Salem, get to Birmingham and he can't hit. Yeah. That's exactly how I,
and Terrell, and from what I've seen of Terrell Tatum, he's going to be a guy that, you know, the kids in those small towns like want to go to the Cannonballers game to see Terrell Tatum run around and grand old time.
He could be like a Joel Booker.
Yeah, that's a good comp. I mean, that's the type of guy. I mean, Booker was already like kind of old when he entered the system, so he was never really a prospect. And look, Tatum might not be either, but yeah, you just, farm systems need these types of guys.
Well, you could read James's work over at futuresox.com. Again, he did an excellent job recapping 1 through 20 for the White Sox 2021 draft. And he and I always have fun covering the Major League Baseball draft, especially with the White Sox perspective. And you can follow James on Twitter. He's at JamesFox917. And James, you know, next year we're going to be in the same boat, man. The White Sox picked 22nd overall in the 2021 draft. In 2022, with the way that things are shaking, the White Sox are probably going to pick after the 25th pick, if not, you know, picks 26, 27, 28, maybe even 29 if they win the whole damn thing. That would be very exciting. So I can't wait to host a 3.5-hour Twitter space covering the first round draft next year.
I know. I hope that we have that problem, right?
Yeah, it's like a good problem to have.
I hope that we have to cover 30 picks in the first round. That would be a tremendous outcome, I think.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah, because that's where, you know, the Dodgers consistently keep picking, and they still do a good job, and you can still get good players. And I think, at least for me, that's the takeaway, that even though the White Sox are drafting later, and they will consistently draft later, especially during this championship window, I know they always get compared to the Cubs rebuild, but the Cubs, I think, didn't do a great job of drafting, and they kind of stopped developing talent. If the White Sox don't want to have the same fate that's plaguing the Cubs right now, before they have to make some really tough decisions before the trade deadline, I think it needed to start this year with an eye towards 2024. And in future draft picks, in future draft classes, that's all they just have to keep doing, is keep feeding the system with this young, exciting talent, high ceiling talent early. And I think they need to continue this strategy, James, of going over slot, especially in rounds 2 and 3, to try to get 3 high quality guys and not be so concerned if this is a good overall 20 round draft. Just, I think, do the best that you can to at least get 5 really good players out of this class and move on.
Yeah, I think, you know, while you're winning, right, you want to add young athletes and you want to continue to add pitching. And it's the one thing like that the Cubs didn't do. They didn't develop any young pitching. And you can't buy pitching every year. You can buy some, I mean, but you can't do it all the time. So, and this is where, you know, this is one of the spots where having a bunch of scouts probably helps the White Sox. I think like you said, you go over slot early with prep athletes, and then you trust that your scouts on the ground can find Jonathan Stevers in round 5 and Jimmy Lambert's in round 5 and Cody Hoyer's in round 6. Like, look, even if you're finding relievers in rounds 5 through 10, that's like one less guy that you have to pay for. So I think, you know, just they're not going to have a top 5 farm system anytime soon. They're not going to be the Dodgers. But if you can stay in that 15 to 25 range, you should have enough to trade, to win baseball games, and to just, you know, have enough to be a pretty good organization going forward.
James also talks about the White Sox farm system and what's going on with the White Sox with Mike Rankin on their podcast, the Future Sox podcast, which you can subscribe to that podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And James, again, this is always fun to collaborate with you for the Major League Baseball draft. And thank you so much for hopping on the Sox Machine podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. And again, thank you so much to our guest, James Fox from Future Sox. If you just discovered the Sox Machine podcast, you can subscribe to the Sox Machine podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Sox Machine. You can follow me on Twitter at SoxMachine_Josh. And you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and your home for all things Chicago White Sox baseball. I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening.